Thank you, Chair Carpenter. So we'll follow up kind of our standard protocols here. I'll give you a little bit of lightning round, but I'm going to put it into basically three buckets, kind of where we're at with the coronavirus and COVID-19, some openers we've been working on, and then I'll wind up with just a follow-up. Commissioner Thorburn already touched on it for where we're at with wolves and activities in the Northeast. And I also add in here, I mean, Commissioner Thorburn made some statements around the current, you know, social unrest, dealing with racism in the country. And I appreciate Commissioner's comments. We are taking this very seriously in the agency. We are working with our internal folks, including the diversity manager that Commissioner Thorburn mentioned, assembling our diversity advisory committee, which is kind of the ground up approach to this. And but just as importantly, we recognize that we're just at the beginning of this. At least Deputy Windrope and myself have been talking about, we come into it with part of the awareness that's being made nationally is how it's difficult to understand if you're not part of that minority group, that we come in with an implicit bias. So we're trying to figure out, how do we, two people who come in with an implicit bias, develop a way to get around that. So we're figuring out, where do we reach out for help to help us understand it, knowing that we can't fully understand it without that help. So we are taking it seriously, and we will continue to do so. And I'm proud of where we are, and I'm fully aware we got a long ways to go as an agency, both. So I'll stop there. So activities around Corona in particular, on the 18th, we got our hiring freeze, equipment purchase freeze, contract freeze. And so we've been dealing with that. It puts an additional administrative burden on, it's not just as simple as, oh, just quit doing that work, because so we've been working on how do we make the determinations on how that's applied. As a non-cabinet agency, we had developed our own exemption process around the hiring piece, and we're moving forward. So we are in alignment with where the rest of the state agencies are going, doing some of that on our own as a non-cabinet agency. So a lot of work going into that right now, as you can imagine. Lots of conversations with OFM. We're also dealing with the budget on the same time, budget cuts that are driven by the coronavirus. Submitted that earlier, had the commission discussions with each of you and staff. So I think that's, Amy Windrope has been a fabulous first lead on all this stuff. I think that covers it well enough. I don't want to get... you know, we could talk the whole time on the details. Bottom line is, it's taken up a lot of our time. We're making progress. We got our field staff generally back out, and we're looking on figuring out the gaps of where our service is not being provided well under telecommute, and so that we can address those, and also looking at where is our service being provided very well under telecommute, and maybe that's something we want to take advantage of, and certainly will affect our scheduling of bringing people back to the office. The other thing we've been spending probably the most, I personally at least have been spending most of my time, is on reopening. As difficult as it was to close, it seems even more difficult to reopen. Each season, each location has its own uniqueness. So we, as you know, on May 5th had a general reopening for recreational fishing, turkey, and spring bear hunting. We were able on May 20th to open Puget Sound halibut. And so that means coordination with our co-managers, coordination with local health officers, coordination with ports. We don't want to open a season and not have access to the water for folks. It just creates an additional tension out there. So all that work is done, and we were able to get to a Puget Sound halibut opener. Generally, when I say an opener, some of these aren't all-inclusive. That was really Marine Areas 5 through 9. That was on the 20th. On the 26th, we opened most of the coast for bottom fish. That's lingcod and rockfish primarily. That was Marine Area 1 through 3 open. And we're Marine Area 4 remains closed. We're working now. Hope we're very close to the end of figuring out how to get that open. And that announcement will be coming out soon. We've got a few more bases to touch before we can go there, finish there. 28th, we were able to open most recreational shrimp through Puget Sound. On the 1st of June, we opened non-resident out-of-state license sales back for hunting and fishing licenses, primarily fishing licenses. And we were able to open campgrounds in 22 counties also on June 1st. On the 8th, we opened intertidal shellfish. And the next big ones coming up are salmon on June 20th. Halibut, we're continuing to work on. Halibut in the ocean areas, I should say, working closely with a group of advisors. We think that's going to be really a fall opener, probably August or September. So that one will be pushed out a little bit. And I think that hits most of the openers that we've been working on. Like I said, a ton of work from staff, and they've done a great job. Really, really happy with the level of outreach and communication with all the affected parties, the local governments, local health officers, co-managers. It's I never knew it'd be so hard to get things open, but we're just about there, at least back consistent with our pamphlets. Other meetings we've had going on, we have met with the Stillaguamish tribe primarily around enforcement at this point. So that's enforcement of not only fisheries, but enforcement around HPAs. Working closely with the tribe, trying to address some of those concerns you heard earlier. There's a lot involved in the North of Falcon, constraining stocks, negotiation positions and postures. The thing we can best do, I think, is get that fishery turned around. To get that fishery turned around is improving that habitat. The Stillaguamish are great partners in that. They're working hard. We're trying to get even more coordinated than we have been and be supportive so that we can get that turned around to take that limitation off, or certainly lessen that limitation right now. I will say, I'm just following up on some of the conversations this morning. The Stillaguamish marked were a constrainer this year for sure, and they were the last constrainer we got to, and we need to address that for certain, as you all talked earlier. But there are, I just want to remind folks, there are a number of layers of constrainers. And if you remove that one, you get some relaxation, but you go up to the next constraining stock. So it's not as if that were the single thing that really drove a lot of our closures. It certainly did. But if not for that, other things were also potentially closing. And we don't know how that would have turned out because we were constrained there. Let's see. Good conversation with Conservation Northwest. I think that fits in with the wolf stuff that we've been hearing about this morning. We are proceeding, trying to get a Region 2 regional director hired. Have made some progress in process, have not made progress on an actual hire. So a big thank you to Andrew Murdoch for stepping up and taking on the management role at a time when it's very, very unique time to take that over, especially as an interim person. So thank you, Andrew. We did have our co-managers meeting, I think it was the 28th. That's a meeting with tribes around North of Falcon. We're looking at the work plan coming out of North of Falcon, making sure we're getting everything in line to be ready for next year and finishing off the things we needed this year to actually support our fisheries. Puget Sound Steelhead Advisory Group, presentations for you all, as you know, met with them a couple times, working on how do we implement their plan. Great work by a great diverse group of stakeholders, something we really want to support. And so we've spent quite a bit of time with them. Co-managers meetings as well on halibut. That's what I talked about earlier about I'm talking about ocean halibut and opening in August or September, probably August. A lot of time in that, again, dealing with co-managers to make on the fishery side, ports, local governments, health officers, et cetera, to make sure we're ready to implement that in a safe, protective way. I think that's most of the meetings I see here on my notes. On the wolf issue, two updates on two packs in particular, and Commissioner Thorburn touched on these. We had reached a lethal threshold under the protocol on the wedge pack a while back. We made the decision that there were more non-lethals that were appropriate in that situation, that it was not appropriate to move to lethal removal at that time. We're continuing to work with the stakeholders. We're continuing to work with the producers in that area to implement additional non-lethals. And so we're still in that implement additional non-lethal stage of our approach there. And I think I'll take that opportunity to say, we heard a lot of testimony this morning. A lot of testimony about how the agency moves directly to lethal removal, not implementing non-lethals. Other testimony suggesting that as soon as we meet a minimum threshold for lethal removal, we jump to lethal removal. And I can say particularly, I can say for my time in particular, the last 22 months, I guess, we are following the protocol. We typically exceed the protocol. And I don't believe there's been an incidence yet when we met the minimum threshold that we move directly to lethal, even at that point. When we meet the minimum lethal, minimum threshold under the protocol, that's a trigger for us to evaluate, is lethal appropriate at that time in that pack with the specifics of that situation. When we've reached that, I don't believe there's been one incident since I've been in my chair where we move directly to lethal as soon as we hit that. We basically continue to look for non-lethals. Plenty of room around the debate and the petition coming up, but the notion that this agency just kills wolves at the drop of a hat is frankly disingenuous. So I'll stop it there. The last pack that we are evaluating is the Togo pack. So this was a pack that was under a lethal removal at the end of last year. That removal did not occur, so we went into an evaluation period. We've had now 7 depredations in the last 10 months, and so we're going through an evaluation now, as Commissioner Thorburn mentioned. We do this with staff, starts with staff. We have a large group of staff, all of our wolf experts, look at that situation, determine whether or not lethal removal is appropriate or not at this time. They make a recommendation to the regional director, who makes a recommendation to me, and then we make a call. So we're in that process right now. I want to make sure that we are able to fully vet through that process. And so a decision will be coming pretty quickly, but I don't have a decision for you right now at this moment. I think that's most of my notes. I have to admit, I've been kind of distracted with a couple different phone calls as I'm listening and trying to multitask. Amy, is there anything that you think would be appropriate or I've missed?
I don't have anything off the top of my head.
Okay, sorry for putting you on the spot. Just want to make sure we cover the bases. So with that, that would be the conclusion of my report. Unless there are questions or input I can receive.
I think we have a hand up. Commissioner Thorburn.
Yeah. Chair Carpenter, may I go ahead?
Commissioner Thorburn, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Director, for your report. It is amazing to watch all that goes into the reopenings. I've had many times made the same comment that reopening seems a lot harder than closing down did. What I wanted to take note of, though, was the comments regarding the decision-making that goes into wolf management around livestock conflict. And you made the point that it's not knee-jerk once the requirement or issues in the protocol are met. The other thing that, as a Wolf Committee member, I think we look over this a little bit more closely than some of the other commissioners, but I just wanted to emphasize something that I noticed in this decision making, and it's the recognition that every situation is different, and that the work the staff from the field level through the layers that the decision goes through recognizes that. And every producer is different, the geography's different, the packs are different, and all of that is considered in the decision making. And that's, I think, a very important feature of the decision making is the recognition that we need flexibility and the ability to cater to each specific incident. So I thank you for your comments.
Okay, we have Commissioner Linville hand up, and Commissioner Anderson next.
Yeah, thank you, Director, for your report. I think what pops into my mind, especially after this morning's testimony from the public, is that first off, I'm glad that you stood up for the department and what they're doing through every time there is a depredation, because it feels to me when you're in the trenches, you're like, you know all of the non-lethals that went into it. You know how much communication with the producers went into it. And so what it kind of highlights for me is maybe we need to keep, really working towards more communication from the department as those non-lethals are put into place and, highlighting those in some way so that the public is even more aware that they are being used really well. And we do have a lot of wins coming out of this. And we are reducing conflict in this state. It's just that we don't hear about that. And so I know it's a lot of effort to put into communicating with the public, but I feel like we probably need to continue to work on that, because there really is coexistence happening. And clearly we need to tell that story a little bit better, I think.
Thank you, Commissioner Linville. Commissioner Anderson, and then behind that is Commissioner McIsaac.
Yes, this concerns the reopening. Beyond that, the possible uptick in COVID cases and what possibly might be coming down the path in the future, and wondering whether or not and to what extent thought has been given to how reclosures might be considered in the future. I'm not suggesting that, but trying to understand what thinking is going on with regard to the possible reclosures should the pandemic issue increase.
So would you like me to answer?
No, go ahead. I saw that Amy had her hand up, so either one or both of you would be fine, Kelly.
Well, I'll start, and then Amy can correct and give you the good information. So we have considered what would take to close again. Frankly, there are so many variables involved, it's hard to predict. So what I can say certainly is we're going to stay attuned, and if we see a situation where we think closure is appropriate, we are prepared to close. It's really difficult to say, is that because we see an increased incidence in a given area, it becomes a hotspot for COVID that we feel like we need more protection? Is it a result of it's a fishery that's just not proceeding, or a hunting, I suppose, but right now it's all fishing mostly. Is there a fishery that's not proceeding orderly in a way that it's increasing risk and exposure? That might be a reason for closure. So we've looked broadly at things to watch for, but we don't have a hard formula for it, partly because I just think it's almost impossible to predict. That's the one thing I know most so far on COVID is I don't know enough to make those kind of predictions. And so, but we need to be ready and nimble to make closures where appropriate. And we're trying to message that to folks as well. We're doing our best. We want to be open, but we'll only be open if we can do it in a safe, orderly, protective manner.
Well, I think that's important. And I think the messaging is key. One of the big problems that occurred with the closures, of course, was the suddenness and the, people just didn't have any idea. And now, time has, passed and people have a better idea, but it'd be very useful, I think, to game out or have some scenarios out there that you could maybe generally talk about, and people might start to understand how it could play out.
Good comments. Deputy Director Wintrow.
So I just wanted to add a little bit to, thank you, Chair, add a little bit to what the Director said. One of the things that we're working on is a timeline of all the decisions that we made and when we made them and the information that we had when we made those decisions. And we're hoping to sort of be able to look at that as a complete story of our decision-making to be able to forecast how we made those decisions with what information so that we will know better how to make decisions with what information are we going to need. So part of this is a learning exercise on how we got to where we got to. Because I think the closures, there's two pieces in my mind with the closures. One is the externals, and the director spoke about that. You know, like, are these proceeding in a way that's safe? What are we learning from the county health folks? And what is the direction from the healthcare professionals? And then there's the internal piece, which is that can our staff do the work they need to do in a safe way, in a safe place to meet the needs of the public? And I think both those pieces have to be weighed. Because our first duty as an employer is to keep our staff safe. So I think, you know, there's both pieces that we've got to look at, and we're hoping to look back, learn more, so that we can make better decisions in the future.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Amy. Anyone else? I guess we're at Commissioner McGuire.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a couple of things, but just as a follow-up on that discussion. So as we move through the fall and the winter, if we get some unfortunate surprises and things get substantially worse and we start to hear phase three going back to phase two, going back to phase 1.5, or we get to a point where there is some consideration of an absolute complete closure again, I just reiterate the concern there about learning from what happened before. And there's different fisheries in the winter than there is in the spring. But I think good communication with the commission on any major policy decision, like a complete closure again, that's what Commissioner Anderson was speaking to anyway. I just had a quick question on Director Sussman, your report on a couple of things that the advisory body report that you mentioned, I think that had to do with the Puget Sound Steelhead Advisory Group and their Quicksilver Initiative. And I just wanted to check if that really was what you're saying. And if so, I wanted to appreciate the fact that you're following up on that direction from our last meeting. So thank you for that. I see you nodding. So just want to say thanks again for that kind of follow-up. I also wanted to say that I appreciate you taking the time to go talk to our Stillaguamish co-managers. While Commissioner Anderson is right, there's always another sticky wicket or another bottleneck somewhere around the corner. This one was a little bit of a surprise, and I appreciate you talking about all the habitat improvements that we can do together as a team with the tribe in any of the conservation hatchery approaches that could be modified to try to make things better. But also to express to them that this was a little bit of a surprise in terms of the effects on the hatchery ceiling being reached. And that as we move through the RMP discussions, that it would be good to try to get a handle the best we can on whether or not this is a complete anomaly that's not going to happen again, most likely. Or wait a minute, there's a 10 or 15% chance it could happen, or you know what? It's a 90% chance that this is going to happen again because we did have more hatchery fish in the forecast. The rest of the stuff seemed about like last year, and all of a sudden, boom, the winter blackmouth fisheries went to zero. So I would hope that as we go through the fall, it's good for the commission to be consulted on a regular basis with these major policy issues that could happen. If there aren't any other changes besides the Stilly hatchery business, that'd be one thing. But if we can just continue that dialogue, maybe in the Fish Committee forum through the fall, so that if another big policy issue comes up as a result of the reasons why we didn't submit it last spring, I think this regular touch base with the commission is a good idea.
We can certainly make sure we stay in closer contact than we have even. And yes, it did come a bit as a surprise, as you heard yesterday in Fish Committee. It's really around the age distribution of the fish rather than the total return size. And I will say also, we did, I think, do a much better job this year communicating with our stakeholders. And the advice we were getting from the stakeholders also was preserve summer opportunity at the expense of winter opportunity. So that drove some of those winter closures as well. We're going to take it from somewhere. We work closely with the stakeholders. The preference was out of the winter. So that drove some of that too. And certainly a dynamic situation. I don't want to say that's all it was. Certainly the constrainer and the surprise that we really were struggling to meet a exploitation rate on the marked fish was the real driver. But you throw all that together and you're going to cut somewhere with that. So that's why the disproportionate hit on winter as well.
Well, I'm pretty familiar with that as well. And I do agree with Commissioner McIsaac that if we could plan on some regular updates, how things are moving forward with the RMP, et cetera, that would be most appreciated, Kelly.
We will certainly do that.
Okay. Does that wrap up your report, Kelly?
It does.
Thank you so much. I'm looking forward into our agenda today. And I expect that we're going to have significantly more folks on the public comment side later in the afternoon. So I'm just looking at this. I'm going to suggest that we go into the land transactions here momentarily, skip the 11:10 break, and get a couple of these others done, take a one-hour lunch at the most, and get back together no later than 1:30, but that may change. We may be able to maybe move that up a little bit earlier. So perhaps, Nikki, you could, or whoever does it, let Jeff Davis know we might bring his schedule forward a little bit. So okay. Anybody have any objection to that? Okay. Agenda.